Welcome back to Kettlebells and Cocktails. I'm your host, John, back with my bestie, Nikki. Nikki, how are you?
I'm awake. I just fell asleep by accident as I was putting my kid to sleep. I was putting him to bed and I was like, oh God, I gotta get up.
Well, I know. I was commenting off there. It's two nights in a row, and two nights in a row you're wearing like really comfy sweat suit. Mm-hmm. Like,
I know. I have like three pairs of these now. I'm wearing matching pants.
Is that a Snuggie? Is that what that is? Oh, there's...
No, it's a brand called Jambies, not sponsored. I know we should be sponsored, but I work with them at my agency now, and we had a shoot the other day. So now I have like all this product at my house. They make like really comfy loungewear. Highly recommend Jambies.
Jambies.
I love it. I love it. Well, let me introduce our guest. We have Nick Thayer with us from the Tactical Games. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you very much for having me. Nice to meet you, Nikki.
Nice to meet you officially. Nice to meet you too.
I'm really excited to have you on. I was, I think most people know, or a lot of people know, I went to the Tactical Games last weekend, first time getting a chance to witness it. And I was kind of texting back and forth with Jacob Heppner, and I'd failed to tell him I was going, or he forgot is actually more accurate. Mm. And I just randomly messaged him and said, dude, I do not have enough facial hair to do the Tactical Games. Like my beard is not on point enough. And he messaged back. He's like, that's so random. Why would you send that? I'm like, well, I'm here watching it. He's like, oh, you have to go meet Nick. Nick's my guy. So I went and introduced myself. And you were gracious enough to come on. So thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. The only reason he said that I'm his guy is because he shipped ammo to my house for the national championship. And he doesn't want me to throw it away.
Oh.
So totally understand that.
Jacob is the most giving dude. When he found out I was going, he's like, are you competing? And I'm like, no, like I'm fit enough to compete, but like I haven't shot in forever. He's like, oh, I'll send you guns. I'll send you a handgun and a rifle. I'm like, no, dude, you don't understand. Like, I own guns, but I have not shot in forever, and I don't even own a handgun. I'm like, I'm not going to make my first experience shooting like in a competition. That's ridiculous. And he was assistant because he's just such a nice dude.
Yeah. You know?
So
and I really like that he was like, I'll send you guns. Like, what do you need? I'll send you flowers. I'll send them right now. 1-800-FLOWERS. Have them there in like 4 hours.
Right.
1-800-GUNS to your door in two hours. What do you need? I will send it.
That's honestly a pretty common thing in our community. And not to say that Hubner didn't bring that with him, because I think he definitely did. And that's why he fit in so well when he came in. It's a very giving group of people, very open and warm and, you know, not necessarily what you would expect when you go to a shooting competition. I think when I showed up for the first time, I expected like something way different than what I experienced. I don't even know what the hell I was walking into. But I got there and every person that I interacted with was friendly, was interested, was engaging, was willing to do anything to help you out, to get you through the competition. It's awesome. It's the best part about our community, and something that, you know, attracted me to CrossFit. I started out in CrossFit as a low level competitor. I competed locally. I did Granite Games and tried to qualify for Wadapalooza a couple of times, but was never really good at the sport. But I loved the community. I loved the people that I met in our gym. I coached at CrossFit NOLA in downtown New Orleans for 7 years, and we had an amazing community there. And it was something that when I came to the Tactical Games as a competitor, I found, and it was like, it was renewed. It was fresh again. It was there. And it was definitely my favorite part about being out there. Sport's awesome. I love tennis. I love shooting. I love doing all these things. But the people are what make it. And I think that's something that maybe CrossFit got away from for a while. It became more about something else. And then I saw especially when Dave got fired, I know you and Dave, whatever, but when he got fired from CrossFit.
Oh, we're buddies. What do you mean? Whatever. Dave and I, we're like this. We're so close. So
when he exited CrossFit, it almost seemed like the box mentality kind of went away. And this is my personal opinion. You know, I don't know what others may think, but that desire for community went away. And I think so many people were attracted to that early on. They left as soon as that left. And then now I've seen a resurgence in that in their community, which is great. But in our community, it's strong. It's there. It's like people are out there. Our message boards, our social media. It's so cool to see people helping one another and still being there to support one another and doing everything we can to make sure that our sport grows and continues to live on.
So let's zoom out a little bit, Nick, because I think a lot of our listeners might not be familiar with the tactical games, exactly what half fitness, half shooting even entails, and your role. So what is your role with the competition?
Yeah, so I actually I'm the owner of the company that hosts the competition. So I started out as a competitor, fell in love with the sport. So we'll start with the sport first and give you guys a little information about that. So the tactical games is fitness and shooting. At like the most basic level, that's the easiest way to describe it. Some people describe it as CrossFit with guns. Some people describe it as like an obstacle course on steroids or obstacle course race on steroids. When you boil it down, it is fitness and shooting. We pair those things together in multiple different ways. We should try to challenge people as best as we can in all aspects of fitness. You know, whether it be a long run or a moderate distance ruck or something that involves an axle bar and putting the axle bar overhead, stability work, getting sandbags off the ground and over objects. We do our best to create objective standards throughout the sport. That you go and you have a specific task, and then you move to the firing line, you shoot, you go through a procedure that allows your, ensures your weapons are clear, meaning there's no ammunition in them, so they can't be fired, so they're safe. Some of your weapons are stored, some of your weapons are put on you, and then you return back and you continue to do fitness. So when all of those things happen, it's a time base, just like you'd see on a CrossFit floor. You have 12 minutes to complete X amount of work, that includes shooting. If you complete it in 10 minutes and 5 seconds, every miss that you didn't make on a scored area and a target, you add time onto your score. So if you have 10 misses, I get 100 seconds added onto my 10 minute and 5 second score. So now I've got whatever math that adds out to. I wish I would have picked an easier number. and then we do it for points as well. So like every rep that you do gets you a point, and every shot that you make gets you a point as well. So we have those two different scoring standards.
And so what is the shooting in and of itself is a skill, and it can be honed and it can be practiced. But when you pair it with fitness, what is like the wild card? Like what happens from what I understand, like you got to steady your heart rate, you got to steady your hands, you got to steady, like explain a little bit about what makes the skill of fitness paired with the skill of shooting really unique to this competition.
For sure. Have you ever gotten your ass kicked in a WOD and you walked away afterwards and you were like kind of shaking and trying to do something, like whether it was operate your phone or whatever it might be?
Literally every day of my life. Yes. Yes.
So like that's the stimulus, right? You're increasing somebody's heart rate, and then you're testing their fine motor skills when that heart rate's been increased. So what it really boils down to is accuracy. So how quickly can you relax your heart rate, get that under control, you know, oxygen back to your eyes, see well, really start breathing well. And then we also shoot in a lot of compacted positions as well that impact your diaphragm. So trying to breathe through that, trying to brace. It's really interesting because we're not in CrossFit and a lot of other sports like that. What you're trying to do is see how hard a person can push themselves, how far they can kind of go. In our sport, it's not about getting your heart rate to 190 beats per minute. It's about finding that 140 to 160 beats per minute and operating to maximum output in that range, and then operating or then performing on the firing line when you get there as well.
You know, Nikki, what was interesting watching, and Nick, maybe you can comment on this, is what surprised me. They would get to the fitness aspect and their heart rates would get up and they'd go to shoot. And I often saw, it wasn't that they were missing the shots. They were fumbling with the weapon. Like they would go to put the mag in. You have to really slap these things in there to get them in. And I can't tell you how many mags I saw fall out because because their hands are shaking and like they're, you know, they're kind of ramped up and they just don't take that extra step. And it's, you know, so there's a real strategic moment there. Probably not that different. And, you know, in CrossFit, I would relate it to, you know, someone, you know, maybe taking too long of a break or not moving on to the next movement when they should. You know, kind of the same thing. It's just a really interesting
picking
component.
Up the bar because their grip is fatigued or whatever it may be. Like, yeah, totally, totally.
A lot of people, again, it's awareness, it's body awareness. And what you're referring to, we have multiple divisions in our sport too. So you know, when we have new shooters, we have an intermediate division for them to come in for their kind of their first experience. We have a tactical division, which is our kind of middle ground, and then our elite division, which is really the, you know, the higher end athletic abilities is in that group. And then we have our master's divisions as well. So when you see people, especially people that are new to the shooting or fit, maybe the fitness and the shooting element, or maybe one or the other, we have people come from fitness background and from a shooting background into the sport. And they're used to a certain ability to go to their belt and grab their pistol magazine, but you put them under a bunch of grip fatigue and now they go to grab it and they touch it for the first time. And they like, they don't have that same ability to grip. That muscle memory is a little gone. So they've got to work under, you know, a different network, putting a different stimulus than what they're used to.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then, you know, there were moments during the day where we were outside the whole time. And in the early morning, shooting was far different than the late afternoon position of the sun and wind and everything. It was just all these kind of extra components, you know, that we don't really deal with in CrossFit or think about very often, that just made it really interesting. And to watch the competitors come off, you could tell the ones coming off, you know, that felt like they'd done a great job, those that were really frustrated, but the whole community still kind of rallying around every single person that was competing. It was a very cool moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that we can do, and we do often, is changing. So the way your weapon performs at, and this is pistol or rifle, the way your weapon performs in close proximity to how it performs, you know, in something out further, 200, 500, 600 yards, it's going to change. So you have to know and understand how your weapon is going to perform at those different yardages. So we don't just change the stimulus by changing targets or changing the fitness stimulus. We might relax the fitness stimulus a little bit and then make the shooting incredibly difficult. So they really have this high of a heart rate. They can concentrate more. And then now it becomes more of an accuracy or marksmanship test down the line. So we mix all these different things up in order to make sure that the competitors are always engaged and, you know, just keeping them on their toes, right? A barbell can only be lifted so many different ways. There's only so many things that you can do on the fitness side of things. So, you know, we have this added element of the shooting that really kind of expands our competitive landscape in a pretty awesome way.
So I'm sure I have like all the same questions as most of our listeners, because this is a world I'm pretty unfamiliar with. So what it sounds like is kind of anyone and everyone is welcome, which is really cool. And you're right, Nick. It's like a community that we can all relate to. If you walk around at the games, it's all like high fives and chest bumps, and everyone's just like happy to be there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it sounds like you guys are really like, no, really, come try it. It's interesting. So what does it look like if you're a beginner, if you aren't super, let's just say it's our audience. Our audience is relatively fit, or at least familiar with fitness, but maybe not so much on the firearm side. Like, what does it look like for someone who might want to try a competition like this for the first time?
For sure.
Or like if John was like, sure, I'll hop in.
Yeah. We're going to get both you guys out there. So that's how this is going to end. Both of you guys are coming out.
Okay.
So I'm going to give this from my perspective, because I was in that boat.
Yeah.
This was my experience. I served in the military. I was in the United States Coast Guard. I didn't do a ton of shooting after boot camp. I mean, I did nerd stuff. I had the nerdiest job. That's what I did. So I say I served in the military. I worked on electronics and weapon systems and comms and cybersecurity and shit like that. It was the nerdiest stuff. When I got out, I found CrossFit and I loved it. Through that, I started a nonprofit and I was doing work at a 5-11 tactical store. The guy that managed the 5-11 tactical store that I was putting an event on at showed me the tactical games on Instagram. And I was like, this is the coolest shit I've ever seen. I want to go out and do this. I found out there was an event 2 weeks later in Meridian, Mississippi. I went and I bought a rifle and I bought a pistol and I bought a holster and a sling. And I went and competed that next weekend. So I had handled a firearm in my life. I understood what the business end of it was and how to be safe with it and not put my finger on the trigger and certain things like that. And then I went out there and I just did it. A lot of people spend so much time and worry so much about being good at something that they don't ever go and do the thing, right? Like they spend all this, like they build up all this, I don't know, anxiety about it. And then they never go do the thing. For me, it's always been just go do the thing. Like if you can operate a weapon safely, if you understand the fundamentals and the basics of what you're doing with a firearm, come out and have fun with us. Like people there will teach you, you will learn. My first match, I met guys that I'm still friends with to this day that like I texted and that was 3-4 years ago. So, you know, for me, it's always jump in, right? Not everybody's comfortable doing that. So we do have training opportunities. We have Tactical Games Universities. We have our athlete camps. We have a bunch of different opportunities for people that are new to firearms, that are new, you know, they have the fitness background, but they're new to firearms, or they have a pretty strong firearm background, but they're new to fitness. Our athlete camp is great for those people. If you're new to firearms, our Tactical Games Universities are great for those. It's an opportunity for somebody to come in with an instructor who is usually somebody that's in law enforcement or somebody that's in the military, or they're a professional instructor in the firearms industry. And they're going to walk you through the basics and the fundamentals without judgment of like, hey, here's this thing. Let me teach you how to use this thing, what it does, mm-hmm. you know, how it operates. And once you get that down, it's amazing how comfortable you can become with something that, you know, I think stereotypically is a weapon of war or whatever they might call it, whatever people might refer to it as.
Well, I think in the live competition too, the safety aspect was really interesting to me. You get, first of all, you guys have a killer judge that was handling the firearm. So I didn't catch his name. He has an impairment, missing his leg from the knee down.
Yep.
Nikki, this guy was amazing. He had, first of all, he had one of those really awesome, like, running blade things that you see runners use, like when they're missing
badass.
It was totally badass. And he was right behind the shooters all day long, giving instruction. And, you know, I didn't see anything that looked unsafe because he was in control. Yep. And often that's my complaint on CrossFit, is like the judges are, you know, a little sketchy at times, you know, no offense if you're a judge, anyone, but this guy was not sketchy. And that's exactly what you want when someone's handling a weapon. And it was really good to see.
Yeah. So I'll give a shout out to James Gill. That's who you saw who was out there. James Gill is a United States Marine. He's a Marine Corps veteran. James was injured in combat. He lost his eye and his leg. Apart from the knee down, or just below the knee. James is one of the top action shooters in the country. He is an incredible athlete. He's a little bit overweight when you see him for the first time. Like, he's got a little bit of a gut. He's working on it. He's getting better. He knows it. But you watch him move for the first time, and it's one of those like, holy shit, did this guy just really do that? He is incredible as a firearm. And watching him go in and out of positions, it's, you know, people always say it's, I couldn't do that able-bodied, and watching him do it no matter what is impressive. He's that good. And he's part of our staff. He came on and took over ownership this year. He came on as a full-time part of our community and a full-time part of our staff. He worked at Quantico. He helped rewrite some of the FBI's doctrine around across the country on how they shoot and perform, and how they train. So he's got an incredible backstory, and he's a great human being and a very accurate representation of people that come out to our sport. I was actually, before this podcast, I was just scrolling back through some of your previous podcasts, and I noticed that you had some episodes about the adaptive divisions at the games. James and I have talked in depth, and the previous owner, Jared Halbert, we talked about this a lot. There was a request early on for us to have an adaptive division. And we talked through it with some of our adaptive athletes and from the field, it was a resounding, we don't want it. We want special treatment. We don't want anything different. We just want to go out there and just do it. We want to have, if we can't do it, we'll figure it out. Like, you know, I can't get over something, figure out a way to help me through it. And that's been having him there, having the other adaptive athletes in our sport there, and just the people in our community. I think it's a testament to who they are, is they're going to show up and there's going to be a test in front of them. You know, if they didn't study for the test, they're going to fail it. And they're going to go back and they're going to work their asses off to come back. And next time that test is there, they're not going to fail it again. That's the community that we have.
You know, it's really interesting for me to hear you say, like, if you're new, or if this is maybe on the horizon still, like, just try it. Yeah. Like, we've got ways to introduce you to it. We've got ways, because to someone like me, right? I'm just one example of the type of person who might be approaching this for the first time, who's unfamiliar. Like, I don't have a particular problem with guns at all, but I myself am quite unfamiliar with guns. And so in a sense, they can make me feel uncomfortable because I don't know how to handle them. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, it's adjacent to the sport that I love. Could be really interesting. It's another tactical skill to hone, but shit, I don't know how I would even ever approach getting into something like this, or stepping onto the floor as a beginner or whatnot. And to hear you be like, we'll just try it. We have all these things and ways that you can scale it back and people who can teach you whatever, it is literally the same as me telling someone who never has thought about walking into a CrossFit gym to just try it. We have on-ramp and we can scale everything for you and you don't have to lift all the weights. And we've got professionals who have been doing this for a million years. And it's quite literally the exact same conversation. And yet for some reason, when I hear you say it, I'm still like, oh God, well, I don't know. Like I've never touched a gun before. I don't really know what I'm doing here. How, what if I mess it up? What if I do whatever? And it's like, it must be what everyone thinks when they look at us and they're like, you guys are crazy. I could never do that. And I'm like, well, just cut the body day. It's so easy. Yeah. Like, you don't have to worry about it. I'm like, finally in those shoes. I think that that is what all those people are feeling like when they have those conversations with us.
That is 100% the case. And it, when you're inside, it's very easy to say, well, just come and try it. Like, it's, you know, it's
right.
It's what we do all the time.
On
the
outside, it's fun.
Yeah. There was a, I heard it one time and I apologize. Like, I'm not a very religious person, but I heard this and it kind of, it impacted me. And, it was, I was talking about CrossFit actually when I had heard it, and it was, you don't find God before you go to church. Right. And that was kind of the way that I looked at it. I like, people would always tell me, I'm going to get fit and then I'm going to start doing CrossFit.
Yeah.
Like,
I've heard that too. Like, what, why? Yeah.
I think people are afraid, and it's an ego thing, right? It's I think human instinct for a lot of people. Nobody wants to show up and suck. Nobody wants to show up and just get the absolute brakes beat off of them, right? Like, people want to show up and they want to know that they're going to be at least somewhat competitive or not make complete asses out of themselves. So I think that's kind of what is beautiful about our sport is we have the fitness element, which people in the CrossFit community have in spades. I mean, if you were to put any CrossFit athlete against, I don't know, pick somebody on a 5-3-1 program that they've been on since they were in high school. The CrossFit athlete, if you were to put them against our test, is going to perform better than a strength athlete, just because the CrossFit athletes tend to be more well-rounded, right?
Sure.
That's what the intention of CrossFit is kind of the sport of everything. Strength athletes will excel in some events in our sport because we have some strength-biased events. But when it comes to the runs or comes to some of the other things, they're probably not going to perform as well. So in our sport, having the fitness side and the shooting side, you can come in and you can at least be good at one of them, right? You're going to know what you're doing when the fitness side comes. So, and do that, do well at that, or take a step back. You know, you've got that in your pocket, go up there and really focus on shooting, really focus on like knowing what you're, you know, getting through that evolution and then you know, flow through the fitness side of it. There's an opportunity for everybody. And I think that's kind of the cool thing about our sport.
I think too, there's probably for the newbies, I don't know if it's as much of a competitive ego type thing as much as it's like a self-preservation thing, which on some level is exactly the same thing, but more of the unknown of like, I don't even know how to do this. When people look at us in the gym and they like see a ring muscle up and they're like, I don't even know how to do that. Like, I don't even know the beginning of how to jump. Do I jump up? Do I swing? I got to pull. I don't even know. I'd like look at a gun and be like, I don't even, what part goes in what first? Like, yeah. I don't even know. So it's really cool to hear that you have the steps to get there. You're like you said, like if you're fit, you're halfway there. Sign up for one of our courses or come to a camp or whatever, and we'll teach you some basics so that you can get in here. It feels like an on-ramp. It feels like an intro class. It feels like an opportunity, you know, to handle stuff for the first time.
And
that's a technical term, right?
Stuff.
Come in and handle stuff.
Yes.
we have an online forum too, where a lot of people come and ask questions, and we have instructors that we trust in local areas too, right? People that we know that are competitors that, you know, they might be LEO, they might be military, they might have some kind of background. They could be civilians that have just been working it. But we'll also refer out people if they're really, you know, really nervous and they just want to like, hey, I just want to figure out how to work this thing. Is there somebody out there? There's tons of classes like that. Like, there's tons of opportunities to locally just go work on your concealed carry, go work on something that like is going to benefit you outside of just competing in the sport, right? You're going to get some basic fundamentals out of going and doing those things and go to the range. I mean, like it's okay to go in there and say, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Can I have an instructor? And they might charge you a little bit of money to have an instructor, but you're going to be in a safe, controlled environment. They're going to explain to you some things pretty basic. It is no different than CrossFit. There are shitty CrossFit coaches. There are shitty instructors out there. So we always ask that if you're somebody that's interested and you're in an area, maybe we can recommend an instructor for you.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing on our part, because I've traveled all over the world. I've worked out in CrossFit gyms and I don't even know how many different continents. And I've seen some of the greatest coaches I've ever seen and some of the absolute worst. And it is no different any other industry where you have people teaching things.
For sure.
You know, Nikki, the other thing that was fun about this event is I found out very quickly that people who do tactical games are not that different than CrossFitters, that they love their gear. And like, you could just look around you could see the ones that spent the most money and who had like the newest, fanciest thing. And then the people that are like the gym rat that have been using the same weapon for 20 years, you know, they're not going to switch because it's their baby. You know, it was really interesting. That's part of why I was sitting around going, I'm not sure I want to do this, because if you look in this room, there's like 13 guitars. And if I pan the camera that way, there's about 13 pairs of CrossFit shoes to my right. So I have a thing, like when I go in, get into a hobby, I go all in. Yep. And I'd be that guy out there buying the dumb expensive handgun and rifle, and I don't need another expensive hobby.
Oh, because gun can be like a collector item type.
I had a laugh at one point. I don't know who the competitor was. I wouldn't call him out anyway, but guy was shooting and he was not hitting a thing. And the guy was standing next to me turned to me and he's like, that $6,000 handgun is not worth a thing if you can't hit anything with it. And I'm like, man, this is
out.
Yeah, it's just like CrossFit though. You see like somebody wearing the brand new Nobles and, you know, their head to toe Noble, and then they can't do shit in the gym. You know,
they've got their own Alico barbell and they can't catch pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like kind of the same thing. Like,
how funny.
I'm like, I can definitely relate to this community.
total sidebar, but John, did I tell you that Hunter is like obsessed with playing guitar right now?
Is he?
Yes. Wow. You would be so proud. We got him a little, he asked for one. I don't know where he saw it, but he asked for he calls it a tar. My tar.
That's awesome.
And he's obsessed with playing guitar, and he wants to watch guitar. Like on TV, like we'll just put on straight like acoustic guitar sessions by John Mayer, and he just sits there with his jaw dropped, like he's obsessed.
Got to put on like Woodstock, the old Wood 69 footage.
Old jams. We go sometimes on Thursday nights. We'll go to this like local restaurant around the corner from our place that has a guy come in and play on Thursday nights, and he won't even eat. He'll just sit at the table like grilled cheese half in his mouth, just staring at this guy playing guitar and singing. And I'm like, I'm not particularly musical. I played guitar for a while when I was like a teenager. Like, I'm not really musical. My husband's not really musical. Don't really understand what's happening, but he'll hold it and strum it and sing it. It doesn't even have, it is made of like, I don't know. It's from Amazon. It's like a ukulele sized thing that's made of like fishing wire. It doesn't even strum like it. You can't tune it. It's just noise.
You need to get him on Guitar Hero.
Yeah, well, what you need to get him, so there's a company called Loog, L-O-O-G, and they just started partnering with Fender, actually, but they've been making guitars forever, and they make them for kids, and they're kid-sized. They have 3 strings, not 6, and they're actually tunable. I bought one for my nephew. They're great.
Oh, my God, how cute!
And they're not expensive. Like, you can get the new little Fender kid guitars for, like, $170.
Yeah. In the realm of musical instruments, you're right. They're not that, but it says 3+.
Yeah. So. You need to wait a year. Wait a year before you do it. Let him keep playing his little tennis racket or whatever. And then a year from now, Uncle John's going to hook him up and get him the right kind of guitar he needs. For sure.
I want to get him like guitar lessons or something, or take him to like toddler music or whatever. But they're always, all the classes around me are always at like Tuesday at 1:00, and I'm like, cool, do these people not work?
Nobody has
to. Amazing. Yeah. I could take him Tuesdays at 1:00, like what a joke.
Well, look, if I had had YouTube at that age, I'd be so much a better guitar player now than I am. You know, like I started when I was 12, but you know, we had to go get books and have teachers and whatever, and you have YouTube for instruction. So get him started as soon as you can.
I rebuilt a 1978 International Scout off of YouTube.
See?
Is that a gun? I assume it's a gun.
No.
No, it's smart. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was like, what is it? Amazing. That's cool.
No,
do anything like, with YouTube.
I lived in Florida at the time. It was like the perfect beach car. I wanted one. And the rebuilt ones are like $250,000. And I didn't have $250,000. So I bought one and got on YouTube and found parts and did it that way. It's amazing what you can do with that.
That's wild.
YouTube's a great. I mean, if even learning how to shoot, they're like going back to that. There is there are a ton of instructors that put out informational stuff on YouTube about like, hey, I'm going to break down this weapon. I'm going to break down a pistol. I'm going to show you what things are. Once you understand what things are, then you understand what the safety aspect is. Like, hey, ammunition goes in a magazine. There's no magazine in the pistol. There's no opportunity for it to actually go back, right? So now, all right, I've understood that. Understanding how slide lock works, how to clean it, like stepping through those fundamentals, just like anything else, you start to understand. It's like in when you go in CrossFit and they break down the foundations of a movement. Once you understand the foundations of a more complex movement, you can start to tie things together. And weapons are no different. They're really the same.
Is social media like YouTube or Instagram, is that a major pain for you guys? I know there's always, you know, anxiety about posting shooting or guns online. Yes. Do you guys have any issues with that?
Constantly. We're shadow banned. Just about every competitor in our sport is shadow banned. It's gotten better, I would say, over the past couple of weeks. But through the middle part of this year, it was almost impossible to find competitors in our sport on Instagram. You would type in their handle and you wouldn't be able to find them unless you typed in their complete handle. So like if I went and I typed in Make right now, I'd be able to find your IG page. But if you 6 months ago went and typed in The Tactical, it wouldn't show up until you typed out Games. It was bad for a while. And that stagnated our growth this year for sure. Instagram at some point this year changed their policy on weapons. And they started declaring kind of everything that included, I mean, even down to LARPing. Do you guys know what LARPing is?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah. We're big nerds.
Right. So like that lightning bolt, like that old school thing, like that video today would have been banned because there were people with swords in it. You know, there's when people don't understand something, they tend to demonize it, right? It's like, I don't know what this is, so I don't like it. And I think that's a lot of what happens in the firearm industry. You know, when there's a car accident that involves a drunk driver, they blame the drunk driver. They don't blame the alcohol. And I think that's kind of a misconception when it comes to things that happen when firearms are involved. They blame the firearm instead of the person that perpetuated the act. And to me, that like, it's a nonsensical approach. I understand it's a reaction. People want to solve problems. People don't want things to happen. They don't want shootings to happen. Neither do I don't want that to happen. Nobody does. I don't think anybody in their right mind does, but it's putting a Band-Aid fix over a permanent problem. I mean, this is not a political thing. I'm not a political human, but I do believe in the protection of the Second Amendment. I think it's incredibly important to the sanctity of our country and the longevity of our country. And you see in so many different instances, and I have so many friends from so many different places that don't have access to firearms as a people, and they're oppressed by their government. And I think that's one thing here that will never happen as long as we have these rights and protection, freedom of speech and freedom to own firearms and the protections that we have that are served by our Constitution, is to ensure that we can continue to have the lifestyle that we have and believe in the things that we do and have a voice and have differences and be different people. It's the beauty that makes up this country was made because of the people that fought for it and continue to fight for it to this day. And I'm happy about that for sure.
I had a little bit of a laugh when I got to your event, by the way. I walked in the door and you guys got the banners everywhere. And there's like a real military feel for it if anybody ever gets to go, because it's a lot of camo and you know, they're weapon manufacturers. And then I turned, there's a TV in the wall and Newsmax was playing. And I'm like, I think people in this room probably swing right a little bit, just a little. I'm just guessing. I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to stereotype.
Well, yeah, what's
keep in mind, I was raised in the Deep South. I'm from Mississippi, and my dad, Old Roy, bought me my first gun when I was 8. And I'm pretty sure when Fox News came out, it hasn't been off since. Like, that's the environment I grew up in. So I was like, all of a sudden, I was homesick. I was like looking for my dad. I'm like, I feel like I'm back in the South.
Dad, are you here?
Exactly.
It's funny because our community is made up of so many different people. And I think there's so many things that like people immediately assume like, oh, you support the Second Amendment, you're right leaning or you're Republican or you've got these other ties with you. I'll tell you, it's not always the case. I know a lot of people that are competitors in our sport that voted on the blue side of things the last time the election came around. You know, I'm definitely a strong libertarian. I don't believe in either party. I think they're both full of shit. I worked after I got out of the military, I worked in the defense industry for about 10 years and I worked on big government projects. you know, kind of the military industrial complex that we see so much and hear so much about now. I worked for that. And it made me distrust the government on both sides more than anything I've ever done. So if there's anything that's the reason that we're in a deficit is because we spend money frivolously and terribly.
I'm with you 100%. I worked as a reporter, a political reporter for a time too, but I was a reporter and a journalist for about 10 years. And I just think two-party system is fucking dumb. Let's just run on platforms.
Yeah.
It's just people build platforms about the things they believe in and the promises they want to make if they run this country. And then we'll vote for the people that we agree with, regardless of parties.
Well, 100%.
It's dumb.
I will say at this event, now, I did see a few Trump hats, which I thought was fun for us. And I did.
Did you wear your own gear where you were but almost, but actually not at all?
No, but conspicuously, I didn't see anything that said Joe Biden that didn't say fuck. That didn't say fuck in front of it. So
there might be all sorts of people, but there also might be a type.
I will say,
Nick, like I appreciate, I think there are really, really big feelings around this kind of stuff. And I really appreciate where you're coming from, because what I think we're missing is civil conversation when people have opinions. And regardless of how we all might feel about like a knee-jerk reaction when you hear a topic like guns, very general. Like, I really appreciate when people just slow down and talk a little bit about how they feel about them in general, because I think it I'm not ever looking to have my mind changed, but my mind is always open. And so I think as long as we're not forcing in each other's hands, like, we should talk about this stuff and we should be like, hey, this is kind of where I'm at, period, you know, and kind of just leave it out there. And I do love hearing just from your life experience how you've landed where you've landed. I appreciate hearing that from you. So thank you for sharing.
We've got like when we were growing up, I don't know how old you guys are. I'm 37. When I was growing up, it was okay to have a different opinion than the other people around you. It was okay. You know, you had neighbors that you talked to that you enjoyed that, you know, might have believed something differently than you. And that was kind of what made this country what it was, is like people had different beliefs, because think about how freaking big this country is. Like, the geographical size, how large this country is, especially if you include Alaska and Hawaii, the thought that every person's going to need the same thing or have the same like daily needs, let alone like lifestyle needs. Like the farmers in Illinois need the same thing as the people in Manhattan. Like, that's asinine. We're all going to have different beliefs and belief systems, but the ability to communicate with one another is incredibly, incredibly important and something that needs to be constant. It's the asinine, like screaming back and forth, or just like people that believe things so wholeheartedly that, like, you know, just are completely unwilling to listen to another person's opinion or viewpoint on it. There's no growth that way, I don't think.
And communication is a full on lost art. Don't get me started on this. I could do another hour on this. And like the youth, I'm 35, so also old. But like the new generations, the up and coming, the one directly underneath us, and then also like the kids that we're raising, like, it is terrifying the lack of communicative skills that these generations are building. And I'm like, talk to each other. In person, like, just stop texting each other from the other side of the table. Like, they've lost the ability to actually communicate. So let's just not, I won't even go there. But
I did see a lot of kids at this event, actually, surprisingly. I mean, families.
Friendly.
Yeah, but young kids. And to your point, they weren't on their phones. They were paying attention. I mean, you kind of have to pay attention to some degree, but it's interesting enough you want to pay attention. And, you know, you often have earplugs in. These kids were paying attention and they're being kids, but, you know, they weren't on their phones. And I thought that was really different, because I go to CrossFit events and I see kids on their phones. You know,
which always depend on the level of interest of the family.
To be fair, I'm often on my phone at CrossFit events. So I'm not judging. I'm just, you know, but there was like kind of a different level of parenting going on.
For sure. I mean, we definitely have competitors that are in their teens. Their parents are with them and engage with them the entire time. We ask anybody that is not legally able to own a firearm, like a 15-year-old that might come out, their parent is with them 100% of the time. And they're some of the most respectful and safe competitors that we have. they come out there, they have an emphasis on it. They love it. They enjoy it. There was one, we had a competitor who has a son who just turned 18, I believe. One of our matches last year, he went around and he picked up brass for the entire match. Just shell casings that have been expelled. He picked them all up, every one of them that he could find. He used that money after collecting it for 2 days straight. I want to say he collected like, I want to say it was 2,000 pounds worth of brass he collected up. He went and he sold it. There is a resale market for used brass. He sold it and he then used that to apply to come back and compete in a competition of ours.
Oh my God, how cute.
It was awesome. Like that kind of stuff is like when you have, and I'm not judging parents. When you have good parents, you generally raise good children, right? People that are engaged and active in their child's life. And that's what we see a lot of times is just the kids that are out there super respectful. I mean, yeah, do they run and climb up hills and throw rocks and do kid stuff? Yeah, for sure. And when they're not doing that, they're sitting there, they're engaged in what's going on. We also have this trick where there's no cell service anywhere that we go. So it kind of doesn't exist.
Can confirm.
That's amazing.
I know, all weekend I was like, I'm going to give these guys shout outs. It's like, no service. I'm like, all right, no. You guys are on, your own.
Nick, what's season look like? Like, you're talking about multiple events. Like, how does it work?
So last year and in 2024, we have 11, we call them regional events, just because they're all over the country. 11 of our regionals were in 10 different states last year. So we did have two in South Carolina. But outside of that, we travel all over the country. Those regional events, if you compete in the elite division, the masters divisions, you qualify for the national championship. So our national championship is coming up next weekend, just outside Austin in Texas, where we're at right now. And it's a 3-day event, and that's where we crown our national champion. So you work all year, you compete in various events to try to gain the spot to the national championship. And then once you've gained it, you get to come here and compete in a 3-day version of our competition.
And how do you qualify for one of those higher levels, like the elite or masters level?
For masters, we have a 40 plus for men's and women, and then a 50 plus for just men's. We don't have enough 50 plus female competitors to really have a solid field there. And then for the elite division, you show up and you compete.
Oh, got it. You don't have to like. And if you do well enough at a regional in that competition, you can move ahead to the finals.
Yeah. So
got it.
The top 5 competitors in a regional event qualify for the national
championship. Got it. So there's no qualification. I could just show up and be like, yeah, I'm going to compete with elites today. And you'd be like, excellent. You will be last in the field, ma'am.
That's fine.
But
somebody's got to be last, right?
It's true. It's true. I could be that person.
Yeah, you could be that person. Nick, I'm 53. So if I competed, I routinely use the women's RX. So maybe I could fill in that women's bracket and you guys could launch it.
Great. There you go.
Right. That's right.
Our first women's 50 plus competitor. Yeah. I'm here for it. Just come out and do it.
World champ.
Breaking down barriers, no, sorry, John, dude. Left and right.
Yeah. One thing that was very interesting to me, I wanted to ask you about, and Nikki, this was really cool. So we always talk about unknown and unknowable in CrossFit, right? The competitors would get their workouts the night before, the day before, and have them reviewed. And then we'd be driving over to the event, and the events are changing en route due to whatever factor. So that was kind of my question. It's like, I thought it was really interesting. You guys are willing to actually change the workouts the day of the workout, which was kind of cool, particularly if you're happen to do the workout itself. And then what are the factors that drive that? Are you trying to keep it random, or are you just going, okay, it's going to rain today, now I have to change whatever?
Both. So we teased a bunch of events for our national championships, and they'll find out as soon as this podcast comes out that there's what we teased is the baseline that we're going to build them around, but the rep schemes and the volume, the shooting distances, all those things are going to be changed. It's to keep people on their toes. It's also to ensure that we have a safe, competitive environment, So when we were out there this time, it just so happened that it rained for like 5 days leading up to that match. Were you there on Saturday?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was muddy. It was really muddy.
It was muddy. And slick mud isn't great for knees. It's not great for ankles. It's not great for a lot of things. So we made modifications that we needed to ensure our competitors were safe. But we still keep an objective standard to what we're doing. So, we will change things at random. You know what? one of my favorite CrossFit Games workouts of all times was Chaos. Do you guys remember this one?
Where I love Chaos.
And just let them do it. They had no idea what the hell was going on. Or there was the Castro moment where they finished like a 3.5 mile trail run.
Yep.
And then it was like, go back. Like that mindset to me, if you can do things like that, if your competition allows for it, that's awesome. Those are the kind of things that we have the ability to do, much like CrossFit, like at the games, they can do things that they can't do at one of the qualifying regional events. It's the same for us. You know, if we've got 200 competitors, we can't do some crazy shit. But if we go into like the national championship where we have a smaller field, we can do kind of those more crazy things that you know, don't impact schedule. Schedule for us is a big driver because of exactly what you said. The light conditions are different. The rain's different. All these different exterior factors come into play. So we have to make sure that we're keeping it consistent for everybody in that division as much as we can.
I laughed on one of these events. Nikki, you'll love this. They're like, are you going to run this trail loop? And they had on a vest and a ruck, you know, and it was muddy as hell, just mud everywhere. And somebody goes, how far is the run? And they're like, until you're done. Nobody knew the distance, you know? So then like we found out later in the day, you know, some people were finishing. They're like, oh, we think it's like 1.8 miles, you know, like they had, you know, people were wearing watches, so they could quickly figure it out. But it was still really funny. I mean, there's till you're done. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go run. And so then they got to figure out, how do I pace this in the mud, wearing a ruck and a vest? Mm-hmm. And some paced it really well and some got smoked. You know, mm-hmm. It was a really interesting test of fitness, I thought.
Mm.
The guy that started this sport, his name is Tim Burke. He's not gone. He just isn't involved anymore. Tim Burke actually, the story allegedly is he was a bodyguard for Greg Glassman at some time. Don't know how true that is. I trust him. I'm sure he wouldn't be lying about that, but he's the one that started the sport. He spent 23 years in special forces. He was a ranger. He retired out of seventh group, I believe. When I first started competing, he was still running the events. One match in the range complex, which is in North Carolina. I think this is the first time I competed in the elite division. They loaded up all the guys in elite, which at this time we started out with 26 on the weekend. I think at this time we dwindled down to 12. They put us in the back of trucks and they drove us out into the middle of the field. And we're driving. They're like, okay, there's going to be a 400 yard sprint to get to your rucks. And then you start the ruck course. Like, okay. So we're driving and we go past 400. I'm CrossFit. I know how far 400 yards is, or 400 meters. And then we keep on driving. And it's at this point probably been about 15 minutes. And we're 2 miles away from where we're supposed to start. He unloads the truck and he starts a timer and says, go. And then we just ran. Everybody dead ass sprinted for 2 miles because it had been raining for days straight. So the rucks on the top were dry, but all the rucks on the bottom were wet because they'd been sitting on the ground. So if you got there last, you got a wet ruck. And these rucks were like, the dry ones were probably 80 pounds and the wet ones are probably 100. And then we had a 5.5 mile ruck after that we had to go on. So we all finished at about 11:30 or midnight because they dropped us off as the sunset. That's what the sport can be like that. And then it can be a 1.8 mile run. So
That's wild.
It was interesting. I also liked your approach to judging. It was just a really interesting thing is the movements they're not simplistic, but they're really easily judged. So an example that kind of blew my mind and I immediately came back to my affiliate, went to one of my co-owners and like, hey, we're doing this moving forward, was hand release burpees.
Yeah.
It had never occurred to me, like you can do a burpee and do a hand release so your chest and thighs are on the ground and there's no way around it. You have to do it, you know? Yeah. And when you're judging burpees in a live competition, that's always a complaint for me, as it's been for others, is that people's chests don't hit the ground.
Yep.
So,
Or they don't stand all the way, right? Like the easiest way to cheat a burpee is to just, well, shit, I don't stand up all the way.
Right.
Giving them like a plate to jump on or giving them an object to move over.
A target. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the target's one of the best ways to do burpees, I think. The creating objective standards is incredibly important to us. It's something that is like, that is what we build as our foundation of our competition. We need to ensure that there isn't the, you know, was it Katrin with the lockout on the kettlebell deadlifts and like all that, like it ruins the flavor of the competition if us three all compete in the same division and us three all have completely different standards that we're being judged. That is the quickest way to devalue something is to just like, you just throw something arbitrary and say, hey, do it or don't do it, whatever, you know, it'll matter, I guess. Like, that to me is so incredibly jacked up. I would rather give a person an objective, and did they complete that objective or not? Are you sure they did? Yes, they got the thing here, or yes, they moved their body through space, or they did these things. It's it makes it so we have our competitors. When they finish competing, they then are safety observers and basically counters. So now their task in judging is hitting the switch. Did you do it or not do it? Not did you achieve lockout? Did you, you know, when you went overhead, was it, were your elbows locked up, were you pressed through? Those things are great in a weightlifting competition. I don't think they're necessarily great in a sport where time matters. Because like every games athlete will tell you, they're going to test the limit of what their judge is going to allow or not allow, right? Like that's your first rep, is to see what you can get away with and they can proceed.
Right.
So that's definitely something that we focus on.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I thought from a spectator standpoint, it made it really easy for me to understand what they were doing. I didn't worry about the judges. I could just kind of watch the athletes.
Yep.
It did occur to me, though, as I was watching the events, that a lot of what you guys do is hard as a spectator, because there's an obvious distance you have to keep away because weapons are involved. Is there any way to address that at all? Maybe the future live streams, drones, whatever?
Yeah.
Jumbotrons.
Jumbotrons.
Well, I'm going to bring Jumbotrons in my trailers. I like that. That sounds like great.
I got you. Great. I'll be here all week.
Nikki, if you can drive, that would be awesome.
No problem. I'll bring my own.
So for us, it's really, yes, there is an option. And we're actually going to roll it out for the first time at our national championship. So it sounds kind of silly, but CCTV cameras can be pointed at targets and you'll be able to see exactly what's happening downrange. So CCTV system with 10 cameras. So a camera on each pistol target and a camera on each rifle target, and then a monitor back to display what's going on. So now any of the spectators can actually see not only the work that's happening, we'll have clocks on the stages so they can see the time that's actually happening, but they'll be able to look at a monitor and see how people are performing as far as shooting goes as well. So it's a way, even though you're far back from the firing line, you can still observe and see what's happening down at the other end.
Yeah, it was with the paper targets. It was as a spectator, it's hard. And I learned by the end of the weekend, I could zoom in with my iPhone and then snap some photos. And then I could zoom in even more after I had the photo to see what they did. That was the best I could do. But the metal targets from a distance are very fun to watch as a spectator. Yeah, you get the little ping. And there's like a delay between when you see it hit and when you hear it hit, which I thought was really... I'd never experienced it before. It was very cool.
So especially when you shoot longer targets, I shot a match this past weekend here in Texas, and I think the longest shot was 680 yards. And at that distance, you pull the trigger, you'll see the shake, you'll see the target move. There's usually hit indicators with lights on them. Those will light up. And then it's like a second later, you're dong. You get a second guess.
Weird.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And the long distance shooting from as a spectator is probably the most fun. You'd like it, Nikki. It's really, really interesting. For me, what was most interesting, this come off a little sexist, so I apologize, Nikki. But I think there's in a lot of people, maybe it's just me, where you see men and women competing side by side. These men are big. Like, I mean, it's like right up front, everyone there is too big for CrossFit. Everyone.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that's interesting.
They're all like 6'2", you know, 240 pounds. These are cops and military and, you know, first responders. They're big boys, you know. And something in your brain goes, all right, well, they should be great at this. And then the women are coming up. You expect them to be not as good. And that is not the case. These women can fire some guns, man, and it's
badass.
It's a little badass and a little intimidating, I'm not gonna lie. But seriously, you like, I watched one of the first women I saw go came out, and she's like ding 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 ding, like one after the other, and I'm like, holy shit. It's like, it was cool. It was very,
I love it. I think we get that in CrossFit the same way that you guys probably get that here, where just it's been a traditionally male dominated field, male dominated hobby, male dominated sport, whatever it may be. And, you know, now that we've got these women who are training for this, and it's less of a I don't know, taboo for women. It's less of a taboo for women to leave their households and not vacuum in their high heels anymore. Thank you, 1950s.
Right.
That it might still kind of strike you as like, oh yeah, they're so good at this because, you know, it's just newer.
Well, there were a lot of them. There were a lot of women there. Yeah.
That's really great to hear.
25% of the field at our national championship is female. And of those females, you have SWAT officers, you have, one of them is an instructor at FLETC. Like they have these incredible careers. We have homicide detectives. We have a ton of different jobs and occupations, with dentists and stay at home moms. I think at first it can be kind of intimidating. My fiance, for example, she started out when I first started competing, she was like, well, screw this. I am never going back. That was this facility that we shot at, we were inside the entire time. She sat outside in like 110 degree weather and basically waited for me to come outside. She was not happy. Now she was just at the range with me shooting today. Right. So it's like you get into it, you get to meet the community, the people, and you start to understand that like your perception of what you thought things were going to be is completely skewed. And you get exposed to like just this whole different group of people that like do real shit. I mean, a lot of the competitors that we have in our sport do real shit for a living. It's not like, you know, and I'm not discrediting anybody that works a 9-to-5 at a tech company and just, you know, sits on their computer and teams all day. There's a space for that. We need that. A lot of these competitors are out there and they're, like I said, homicide detectives. The stories that one of our competitors or our competitors come back with, it's like, how do you decompress? This is it. This is how they do it. They go out there and they exert themselves physically. They exercise, they find a passion and a hobby that allows them to demonstrate their abilities and to do these different things. Because, you know, so many people in those professions, when you get into law enforcement, you get into military, like you find solace in a bottle. And that is like the worst freaking way. I have so many friends that when I was on active duty and so many friends are in law enforcement that like they drink, that's how they escape. And instead of that, these people have now found like, hey, instead of drinking, I can dedicate all that money, that $185, and maybe I get a membership at a local affiliate. Maybe I start doing CrossFit. Maybe I start doing something that's going to improve my health instead of meeting for like shit Saturday morning and Sunday.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a fair point for sure.
So, Nikki, you ready to buy some guns? Go do some shooting.
Sure, why not?
Why not?
Come on and compete. I think it happens more often than not. People come up to me and they say, I thought I knew what this was going to be and it's totally different. And I'll be back as soon as I can get back here. It's cool. It's cool for sure.
That's very cool. I just think I like every description that you give of the event or the types of people or the reaction, I'm like, oh, that's what people think about CrossFit. Oh, that's what people think about CrossFit. Like, it's the exact same thing. It's like, of course, you know, they see us for the very first time. Maybe they don't expect the women to be as strong as the men, or maybe they, you know, didn't think that they could do it, or they didn't understand that they could approach it, or it's just a completely different experience, or the people are what they remember more than anything else. I'm like, oh yeah, that's like just what we do. So it's, I see the parallels and I can completely understand how and why there's so much crossover between the communities. It makes total sense to me.
And we, you know, a lot of the guys and women that are aging out of CrossFit, because it's like the NFL, like you hit 30 and all of a sudden you're not relevant anymore until you can get to the 35 plus category in the games. Jacob is a great example of this. Jacob, I think, beat the shit out of his body for a long time and then needed a break from that level of physical training. And he still utilizes the methodology. He's still doing CrossFit. But now he's also shooting and he's dedicated just as much time to shooting as he has to fitness, and he's excelled. He, and there's one more hobbit that we have in our sport. There's two of them that are on that 5'7". They're incredible athletes, and it's cool to see them. And they hang with guys that are 6'4", 6'5", 260 pounds, just out there crushing, you know, because our sport lends to that. That's the intention behind it, is you can't just be good at one thing. You've got to be good at a bunch of different things. Or, you know, you can't be great at one thing. You got to be good at a bunch of different things. So.
Well, next time you talk to Jacob, tell him I recommended you guys put handstand pushups into your workouts, but you have to measure.
You have to measure
the forearm or whatever the standard was that pissed him off that year.
Tell him to send me a bouquet of guns when he has a chance.
I will make
sure. And then, you know, we'll figure it out from there.
He's showing up here. If he's not here already, he's going to be here soon. The Rogue Invitational is here this weekend. So
that's
him and Christine Cullenbrander and her husband is here. And everybody's just kind of here. So it's cool. I'm actually supposed to meet with the California Bear is coming out, and he's going to start competing. Jason Kalipa is going to come out and start competing in our sport.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
He's been training with a guy named Tim Kennedy out here. And it's like Jared Stevens is another way. Christine Kohlbrenner's husband. I've competed with him. He was my teammate on team competitions a couple times this year. Cody Anderson is another fun one. Margo Edwards.
For real?
Yeah.
I know Margo has been crushing too.
Yeah. It's awesome to see people that, you know, they like, you get the shit kicked out of you by CrossFit. There's training for the sport of CrossFit is different than I think the methodology was ever intended for. I think the methodology was intended for longevity. And to me, training for the sport of CrossFit does not lead to longevity, like real high level CrossFit.
I would agree with that. I think that's the same in any high level sport when you're at the highest level. I fully agree with that.
Yep. It can be damaging. But the methodology of CrossFit, I believe in wholeheartedly. I think that like it has allowed me to do so many things that I wouldn't have been able to do if I was just powerlifting or doing strength training. It's, you know, I had a friend one day who asked me, it was at our national championship last year. I was competing and she asked if my fiance and I wanted to go to Oahu and do a 50-mile ruck in like 2 weeks. I'd never trained to do a 50-mile ruck, but I knew that because I've been doing CrossFit and I like any challenge that's kind of been in front of me, I've been able to at least go out there and be okay at and try to do
it.
And I think that that training in CrossFit lends to that. So hopefully people hearing this will be more inclined now to know like, okay, I've got the physical part of it. I can
go
into tactical games and trust.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I thought the community was great, Nick. I really appreciated you guys let me wander around and look clueless all weekend. But it was great. I mean, really well-run competition. Everyone looked very happy, and I'd give it a big recommend. If you like to shoot or you want to learn to shoot and you like fitness, maybe you want to figure out fitness, check it out. I think it's very cool. Very cool. And we'll get Nikki out there with us soon.
Awesome.
Just happy to be here.
Well, I'm in the same boat, Nikki. I don't have any guns. Like, well, yeah, I have a shotgun that was my granddad's. It's like a 1920 something Browning. It's just old as hell.
Well, you know the rule. Like, Jacob's got guns, so he'll loan them to anybody that needs.
He'll just send them to you.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently. Well, Nick, thanks for joining. Super fun. Before we wrap up, where would you point everyone to your, what's your website? Instagram, all of that.
Yeah, thank you. www.thetacticalgames.com, at the tactical games. I think we have a Twitter too. We don't do much on that. Twitter's
no one does.
Elon Musk is it's dangerous. So Instagram's a really good place to find us at the tactical games, and then the website as well. YouTube's a great resource too.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for joining, Nick.
Yeah.
Great seeing you again, two nights in a row in your fuzzy sweaters. Everyone's got to
maybe
watch
we'll make it three if you're lucky. Hey,
I could only be so lucky. All right. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll chat with you guys soon.
Thanks, guys.